This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing. Your number for the show is 877-217-5757. You can reach us by email, talk@talklouisiana.org. And a reminder that we're heading down the home stretch, and we need your support. It is from listeners that the majority, the overwhelming majority of the dollars that are necessary to keep the programs alive and well on WRKF, that's where they come from people who listen to this station and appreciate what they hear. And we want you to be in the family and to join forces with WRKF as we march forward in year number 39 for this station, which began January 18, 1980. 855-893-WRKF, 855-893-9753. You'll be in and out on the phone in less than 89.3 seconds, and you'll have done your good deed for the day, the month, and perhaps the year. 855-893-WRKF. We're in studio with Mike Wolf, the granddaddy of the Libertarian Party, the man who was libertarian before it was cool, who still remains a member of that party and, of course, has at times harsh things to say about both of the major parties. And we had quite an episode of contention involving the confirmation of Brett Michael Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court, 53 years young. He should be there for a long time. Since the court was established in 1789, only 114 people have been members of the U.S. Supreme Court. Of those 114, there have been 108 white males, 4 females, and 2 African-American males. And Brett Kavanaugh is a white male, and like every other member of the court, he is a graduate of an Ivy League university, and he is, of course, part of the American elite. And he was approved on a vote of 50 to 48 with one abstention on Saturday. And the two Louisiana U.S. Senators, John Neely Kennedy and William Morgan Cassidy, cast the deciding votes to make Brett Kavanaugh the 114th member of the court. He comes to the court, as we know, as somewhat of a tainted member because of all the controversy swirling about him during the confirmation process. In the past, presidents such as Ronald Reagan, when he had a controversial nominee, as he did on at least one occasion with Judge Ginsburg, he pulled him, and that resulted in Anthony Kennedy becoming a member of the court, and it is Kavanaugh who succeeds Kennedy on the high court. On another occasion, Ronald Reagan stuck to his guns and allowed Robert Bork to go to a vote. That vote was 58 to 42 against Bork. Both Louisiana U.S. senators voted against him, but when it came time for Clarence Thomas a few years later, both Louisiana senators, Breaux and Johnston, voted for Clarence Thomas, who actually got 11 Democratic votes. If not for that, Clarence Thomas would not have been on the court. He was only 43. He's been there 27 years. He's 70 years old. He could be there a very long time. Brett Kavanaugh, of course, could be there 20 years, 30 years, maybe even more if he lives a long life and chooses to remain a member of the court. After all, it is a lifetime appointment. Mike Wolf, he said, Justice Kavanaugh did, that his life was ruined. Some people would say a lifetime appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court is a pretty good thing. What do you think about where we are with him, and how will he be able to do his job under this cloud?
Well, it remains to be seen primarily. It's hard to believe that his life has been ruined. I think he's been exalted to a rarefied position. He's going to probably very much enjoy the rest of his life making these momentous decisions on the Supreme Court. The biggest concern about him was that he was overly partisan, that he was committed to Republican ideologies and wouldn't have an open mind, of course, on the court, and that he was biased or prejudiced. It's hard to decide about things like that. I've been researching the Federalist Society, which is the organization of conservative lawyers that suggested him to President Trump. And it's clear that they had intended to present candidates for judges, for judgeships, who would be committed to overturning Roe versus Wade. So I think it was natural for the opponents to Kavanaugh to be so skeptical of him and to think he was prejudiced because he seemed to have a preset agenda. He says he's open-minded. He convinced Senator Collins that he would maintain Roe versus Wade, apparently. So we just have to see what's going to happen, really.
Well, the Supreme Court occasionally has a 5-4 decision. That's been more often than not on some of these major decisions, starting in 2000 with the Bush-Gore case, in which the Supreme Court called off the recount in Florida, which quite possibly would have given Albert Gore the presidency. Five justices voted to stop the recount. Four voted to allow it to continue. And as I look at the 5-4 decision, seven of the members of the court at that time, by the way, were nominated by Republican presidents, seven of the nine. But Souter, Breyer, Ginsburg, and Stevens all voted to allow the vote to go forward and or the recount to go forward. But they were overruled by Kennedy, O'Connor, Rehnquist, Thomas, and Scalia. So I would guess, Mike Wolf, as much as the court pretends that it's above politics, the five who voted to stop the recount probably voted for George Bush, and the four that voted to allow the recount to continue probably voted for Albert Arnold Gore. So is politics really immune to the court?
No, obviously the court is political. That's what you're getting at, and many people have observed, someone put it long ago, the justices read the newspapers, and they watch the election returns. So they're aware of the... Everyone says that John Roberts, the Chief Justice, is trying to improve the stature of the court or enhance it, raise it. And part of what they mean by that is that he wants people to agree with the court's decisions. So to get more people to agree with the court's decisions, you've got to try to make consensus decisions. And I think a lot of them are trying to do that. And so they look at the election results as an indication of where the winds are blowing, what public opinion is, the state of public opinion, mm-hmm. and certainly they consider the state of public opinion. They're not supposed to be elected officials following the wishes of the constituents. They're supposed to be honoring the law. So it's a very ambiguous situation, and they can justify almost any position with any set of reasonings that they want to use.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And Ashley notes correctly that of the five justices now who were nominated by Republican presidents, four of those nominations came from presidents who did not win the overall vote. The only Republican-nominated justice on the court who came from a president who won the overall vote when he was first elected was Clarence Thomas. Does that make the other four illegitimate, Mike?
No, of course not, because we follow an institutional system, and the system is the president in office nominates the replacements or the open seats. Of course, we saw that violated by the Republicans with Merrick Garland at the end of President Obama's term. And then, of course, they had the filibuster rule, and they got rid of that. So it's, 50-50. One votes will determine, a confirmation or not. It's all changing and it's shifting all the time. The point is you can't tell what's going to happen based on a rationale. You have to look at the individuals. You have to look at an individual case. What are their reasonings for it? What are their judicial philosophies and so forth? That's really the short of it.
Now, both Louisiana U.S. senators voted for Kavanaugh, Kennedy and Cassidy. Kennedy said that those who opposed Kavanaugh had gone straight from breastfeeding to red meat. And Cassidy said those who were against Kavanaugh were unscrupulous. Now, these are two men, Cassidy and Kennedy, who 15 years ago were lifelong Democrats. That time, Cassidy was a 46-year-old doctor. Kennedy was a 52-year-old state treasurer. They had been Democrats their whole life, but they became Republicans, and now they are not only Republicans, but they are moving to the right flank of the Republican Party. What happened there, Libertarian Michael Wolf?
Well, they looked at where the wind was blowing, basically. I would suspect that's why they switched. They saw the state going Republican, and Democrats losing, and so they became Republicans. It's very familiar to us in Louisiana.
You don't think it was principle?
No, I don't know. And they always say the party left them. Getting back to this question of what the principles are, I've been looking at the principles of the Federalist Society, and they claim that in general they want the judges who will say what the law is, not what it should be. And that's really a false proposition, because the law is not a static thing, and when a court adjudicates, they apply the law to a case. They have to, in legal studies, they often use the expression "find the law." They have to discover what the law is in applying it to a particular case. The law is not some fixed thing; it is given meaning in the resolution of a case. So, to start at the beginning and say that you're going to the law, what the law is one thing, and what it should be is something else, is not correct.
Well, Robert Bork, who is noted was defeated, he's one of those, and others have followed, Scalia being one of them, this doctrine of original intent, that we need to know what the founding fathers meant, and it doesn't matter what we think, it's what they meant, because that's the law. What do you think?
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Bork, in fact, was one of the first advisors to the Federalist Society. Was set up as a group of law students, and they had faculty advisors. The first two were Scalia at Chicago and Bork at Yale, and their whole purpose was to oppose liberal ideology, as they call it. And this business about not making law, they seize on as a simple slogan of an explanation of their position. And it says it means basically that they will not legislate. But as I say, that's simplistic and doesn't really address the questions that are at hand in most cases.
877-217-5757 for Mike Wolf for WRKF. We'd certainly like to hear from you at 855-893-9753. Thanks to Evie and Hoyt, who called in the last few minutes, and we'll be back.
I'm Molino, and the voice of Louisiana Agriculture Radio Network Studios, powered by Louisiana Propane. Today's opening market report, sponsored by Mueller Metal Buildings and Roofing. For nearly 85 years, Mueller has manufactured metal barns, workspaces, and roofing for the farm and rural lifestyle. Visit MuellerINC.com. At the Board of Trade this morning, November soybeans, 854 and a quarter, down 8 3/4. January, 868 and a quarter, down 8 1/2. December cotton, 76.58, down 43. March, 77.85, down 22. December corn, 363 and 3/4, down 3/4. March, 375 and a half, down a penny. November rice, 11 even, up 5. January, 11.11 and 1/2, down 1 1/2. March wheat at Chicago, 532, down 3 1/4. July, 548 1/2, down 3 1/2. January sugar unchanged, 2531. October live cattle, 112.42, down 92. I'm Don Molino, the voice of Louisiana Agriculture Radio Network.
We've all been there, staring into the fridge, trying to figure out what to make for dinner. Well, if you keep a batch of cooked rice on hand, you'll always have the makings of a great meal. You know, rice keeps in the fridge for 4 to 6 days. You can use it all week long and never serve it the same way twice. Getting a good homemade meal on the table every night is no picnic, but it's a lot easier if you start with rice. Just a little grain of wisdom from the proud farmers of certified Louisiana rice.
The 2019 Louisiana Agriculture Hall of Distinction inductions will take place Thursday, March 7th in Baton Rouge. Nominations are now being accepted for any person who has made a significant contribution to the Louisiana agriculture industry. Nomination forms are available at any LSU Ag Center Extension Service office or online at LouisianaRadioNetwork.com or LSUAgCenter.com. The Louisiana Agriculture Hall of Distinction, recognizing excellence in Louisiana agriculture.
This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And a reminder that if you like this hour of programming or any other hour on WRKF, it is you who make the trains roll. 855-893-WRKF, and you'll be in and out fewer than 89.3 seconds if you give a call right now to 855-893-9753. And we're in the home stretch. We need about $20,000 to shut this drive down, and we're confident we can get it in the next 24 hours or so. So once again, 855-893-9753 with Attorney Michael Wolf, who's a libertarian and is, of course, an avid follower of the U.S. Supreme Court, as most lawyers are. Brett Kavanaugh is on the court. Brett Michael Kavanaugh is a justice like many of the others. He received his law degree from Yale, and in the last 30 years, every justice has graduated either from Yale, Harvard, or Columbia Law School. The last five U.S. presidents have been Ivy Leaguers, and all this talk about draining the swamp, Michael Wolf, it seems that if it really is a swamp, it's populated by Ivy Leaguers, and nothing has changed. What do you think about why isn't some guy from LSU on the court?
That's a good question, but humans are herd animals. They get their opinions from the crowd, and the crowd determines awards prestige and honor and so forth, and these Ivy League schools have that characteristic, and the people follow those views, and so they think that they're superior, that they've had superior background, superior education. When you look at this Federalist Society network, it is just that. It's a network of conservative lawyers, and they cultivate them, the potential judges, over a period of years, and they don't have to get them to commit to take a particular mm-hmm. stand on a case. They know them so well. They know their attitudes and their belief systems, and they naturally, basically, they select themselves. They're self-selected for conservative ideology, and then that becomes recognized. And so now you get what Trump has done, for example. He's picked them and allowed them to nominate the candidates, and he knows he will satisfy the conservative opinion groups when he chooses from people recommended by the Federalist Society.
As mentioned, of the 114 justices, 108 have been white males, only four females, and two African-Americans. And they're all from the Ivy League, all nine of them. So is this really representative of the American people? How many of these people, for example, have tried a case in court? How many of them have had real jobs where they've worked with their hands prior to becoming these erudite men of the court and women of the court? It seems that there isn't much diversity on the court, despite the fact that we do have three women who are members of the court and one African-American. When it comes to other facets of their life, it's pretty much business as usual.
It's hard to say. There are only nine of them. And in general, American politics pays much too much attention to the ethnic characteristics of people, and they speak of diversity as being their racial or their gender characteristics. But they don't explore enough their ideas, their values, their principles, their life experiences. You would just have to search much further to know what differences may exist among these nine people. I don't think it's sufficient to simply say they all went to the Ivy League or one of those three or four schools you mentioned.
And then the last one who didn't go to one of those three went to Stanford. So, well, as you as a Stanford graduate would acknowledge, that's a lot closer to the Ivy League than it is to the Southeastern Conference.
Yeah. But again, these schools have reputations for having superior faculty, superior resources. They're highly competitive, so they select usually the highest scoring or highest achieving students. And so they get this reputation of being centers of excellence. But it's not necessarily valid, but they have that reputation, and so you just deal with it. But again, I don't think we should spend too much time looking at that, though you do hear people say all the time there are too many Ivy Leaguers on the high courts. But they were appointed by the presidents, you know, and the presidents...
And we've had five straight Ivy League presidents.
Yeah.
We haven't had a non-Ivy Leaguer since Ronald Wilson Reagan. They're all... Bush 1 was from Yale. Clinton was from Yale. Bush 2 was from Yale. Mm-hmm. Do we see a pattern here? Obama was from Columbia and Yale. Columbia and Harvard, and Trump is from Penn.
Yes, but there is obviously there's a connection, and again, these people, but you have a chicken and egg problem, or which direction is the causation? And in general, it's the same things that motivate them to go to the elite schools are the things that put them in the social circles that make them end up being contenders for the presidency. So it's several things moving in the same direction.
877-217-5757. We will go to the phone lines with Michael Wolf. And please give us a call in our remaining moments this hour 893-9753. Put an 855 in front of that, 893-WRKF, and you'll have done a great deed for this tremendous resource in our community. It was 45 years ago today that Spiro Agnew resigned the vice presidency for sins that he committed while governing the great state of Maryland. And 10 days later, Richard Milhouse Nixon ordered William Ruckelshaus and Elliot Richardson to fire the special prosecutor, Archibald Cox. They refused, and then he found a fellow who would do it gladly. His name, Robert Bork, the Solicitor General. Just for that, Mike Wolf, just for that, Bork should have been disqualified from the court, shouldn't he?
I don't think that I would say that. I don't think I'd agree with you on that, Jim. Again, it's just there are too many things involved. But Bork, I would never have favored someone like Bork because of his views on the Constitution. For example, he had written that the Ninth Amendment was meaningless. And that's just a shock. That's saying rights expressed in the Constitution aren't intended to deny others that aren't mentioned.
Right.
And it's just atrocious to think that that has no meaning.
Ann on Blue Bonnet. Ann, good to hear from you. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Ann.
Good morning. I was calling to say I don't think that there's an issue with necessarily Ivy League schools, but I do agree with Mr. Wolf's comments that life experience and background are very important, and that's one of my main problems with now Justice Kavanaugh. You know, people like Ginsburg and Scalia, maybe some of the others came from a middle-class background. You know, you can tell they love humanity and they want to do good. They have different ideas about how to do that, and I think that's why Ginsburg and Scalia were such good friends. But you get Kavanaugh, who had no experience at all, even being a lawyer. He didn't deal with people. He went out there in the trenches. He grew up in a very privileged country clubby lifestyle, and I think that's more important. To look at their full background, not necessarily where they go to school. I'm not going to fault anyone for going to the best schools in the country.
Mike?
No, I agree with you. I think that's very sensible. There's also the question of judicial temperament. Many people were turned off by Kavanaugh when they saw how disputatious he was during the hearings.
Disputatious?
Yes, and how challenging and how rude.
I think I'll use it.
He was. He didn't seem balanced, and he seemed angry, and he was angry, and he overstated his case. He oversimplified things. He wasn't being truthful. Obviously, he was not being truthful about all of his high school experiences, and so those things go into it. Of course, you want an honest person.
We have a Supreme Court justice who forevermore has been tagged by Bill Maher as Schlitz Kavanaugh. Barry in Mid-City. Barry, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Enjoying your show again. Thank you so much. I wanted to mention my late brother, Eddie Eliyahu, whom you knew, Jim, and he was, of course, an attorney. When we were in high school back in the 1950s, the American Legion in New York State had an oratorical contest on the Constitution. And one of Eddie's favorite phrases that he would bellow when he was speaking was the following, that the Supreme Court is the Constitution. I always remember him saying that, and I wondered if Mike could comment on that.
Yeah, well, that's a very interesting point. That's very similar to the observation that the Constitution means what the judges say it means. That's kind of a radical empiricist or positive point of view, that things are only real according to what happens. And I think it's an unfortunate opinion, but many people do believe that as a factual matter. You know, five votes determine a case, and so mm-hmm. the law becomes the decision of those five people. But
right.
hopefully the people will be deciding on the basis of principles.
All right. Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes. If judges can, as you say, justify wherever they want to end up, is there a concern on the part of employees, consumers, plaintiffs in general, that an ambitious judge will throw cases out because the power brokers in a position to decide who gets promoted to a higher court will come from corporate America.
Well, many people attacked Kavanaugh because they said his decisions tended to favor corporate interest. To me, that's not an adequate criticism without looking at what the issues were in those cases.
All right. You're going to have to answer this one quick, but Tom asks, are you happy that there is now a fifth Catholic on the High Court of the United States of America?
Too many Catholics, and I'm a former Catholic, so...
Too many Catholics?
I think so.
Well, all Ivy Leaguers and five Roman Catholics. How's that for diversity? Mike Wolf, thanks. King Alexander.